Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for March 22nd, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking with Sarah Schumacher and Walter Koch about a peptide that can inhibit pathological cardiac hypertrophy. Untreated or poorly controlled high blood pressure can cause the walls of the heart to thicken, a condition known as cardiac hypertrophy, which can lead to heart failure. Signaling from G-protein-coupled receptors through the G-protein G-alpha-Q promotes cardiac hypertrophy. GPCR kinase 2, or GERK2, inhibits G-alpha-Q in cultured cells. Sarah Schumacher and Walter Koch have found that overexpressing the domain of GERK2 that binds to and inhibits G-alpha-Q can reduce cardiac hypertrophy in response to pressure overload in mice. Schumacher and Koch spoke to me from the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University in Philadelphia. Hi, Dr. Schumacher and Dr. Koch. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
It's great to be here.
Wally, first I'd like to talk a little bit about GERK2 and what it does. GERK2 has three domains. What does each domain do?
GRK2, or G-protein-coupled receptor kinase 2, is an enzyme that's pretty much everywhere in the body. It's highly expressed in the heart, which is where we study it. It was discovered 30 years ago as it was purified with the beta adrenergic receptor. So its primary function is to shut off receptors such as the adrenergic receptors via phosphorylation. And so GRK2 in this family of kinases has three domains, as you stated. The middle domain or the central domain is the catalytic domain. So that's what binds ATP and does the phosphotransfer on proteins. The carboxyl domain has been shown for this kinase, GRK2, to target it to the plasma membrane where the receptors are located. And the amino terminus is not as clearly known what it does. There is a portion that certainly interacts with the receptor. So you have the C-terminus binding to the membrane, the N-terminus binding to the receptor, so then the central catalytic domain can do the phosphorylation. But there also, within the amino terminal domain, is this RGS-like domain, which is what we studied in this paper.
You said that GERK2 is present in cells pretty much throughout the body, but you specifically study it in the heart. How is GERK2 related to cardiac hypertrophy?
The reason we study it is because we found 20 years ago or so that GRK2 is upregulated in human failing myocardium, and then when we started going to animal models, it's upregulated pretty much as soon as the heart is injured, and so cardiac hypertrophy is a compensatory mechanism initially against certain types of injury, and GRK2 goes up when the heart is hypertrophic. And some of our studies have shown that GRK2 is involved in the transition between this compensatory hypertrophy and heart failure. So in the heart, we feel it's very important because it is upregulated with disease.
And I have just a quick question about cardiac hypertrophy. Do the walls of the heart thicken because there are more cells there? Do the cardiomyocytes proliferate, or are they just larger cells?
They're just larger cells. There is not much proliferation that goes on in the adult heart. People are certainly studying that, and they're looking at regeneration potentially. But in most cases, you know, in a random hypertrophic heart, it's because the myocytes are bigger.
In this study, you were overexpressing a peptide that corresponds to a piece of a particular domain of GERK2. Which domain does that peptide come from, and what does that domain do?
The peptide that we're looking at is in the amino terminus of GERK2, and it's a portion that's called the RGS homology domain, or regulator of G-protein signaling homology domain. And there have been studies that have looked at this in vitro, and it doesn't act as a canonical regulator of G-protein signaling, where it increases the GTPase activity and has a quicker turnover of these G-alpha proteins. Instead, what it does is it binds to G-alpha-Q in more of what looks like an effector binding structure. So basically, the GLFAQ is binding to this RGS peptide of GRK2 in a way it would normally bind to other effector proteins. So instead of binding to phospholipase C or other enzymes that it would signal through, it instead binds to this RGS peptide, and that sort of sequesters it and keeps it from signaling through its normal pathways in the cell.
It's essentially competing with the normal substrates of GLFAQ.
Yes, that's correct.
How did that affect how the heart responded to increased pressure?
Yes, so in contrast to the pronounced increase in the left ventricular hypertrophy that we see in the control mice, overexpression of this RGS peptide of GRK2 produced a blunted or mild hypertrophy. And that's really important because we're not completely abolishing the hypertrophy. We're just creating a milder version. This is because other studies have shown that if you completely eradicate that hypertrophic response, which is an adaptive response to the increased blood pressure, that completely abolishing that can actually have detrimental effects. So the fact that we still have hypertrophy, it's just a milder form. In our case, it's a form that doesn't include the fibrosis and some of the other detrimental effects of signaling. It's actually very important for the survival of the heart and the health of the heart.
Did expressing that peptide from GRK2 reduce fatal heart failure in your mice?
Yes. So what happens is normally in response to the increased blood pressure, you have the initial adaptive phase where there's increased signaling through G-protein-coupled receptors that are coupled to GLFAQ, and that leads to signaling that includes cell death and fibrosis, changes in gene expression, and alterations in calcium handling and cardiomyocyte function. And initially, that's adaptive. The heart muscle grows to sort of compensate for the pressure. But what happens is eventually that cell death and fibrosis, those changes in gene expression, that leads to dilation of the ventricle, the walls become thin, and the heart can no longer contract as efficiently. And so in the case of the RGS mice, we have that, as I said, mild hypertrophy where we do not have the same degree of fibrosis or changes in gene expression. And so what we were able to do was preserve the ventricular structure and function and prevent that decompensation of heart failure in the RGS overexpressing mice, whereas their control counterparts did progress into heart failure.
Did you check to see whether expressing this peptide could reverse cardiac hypertrophy that was already established in a mouse?
Unfortunately, we have not yet. That's actually something we're working on right now. It's a very important question for the lab, but the mice that we have at this point are constitutive expression. So we could just see what happened when the peptide was already present. But we are developing a virus as we speak that would allow us to give a systemic delivery of the virus that would produce expression of this peptide only in the heart. And what we could do is introduce that at various stages after disease or before disease and see, okay, if we have already established hypertrophy or if we have the heart already transitioning into heart failure and we introduce this peptide at that point, what the effect would be. So that's a very important question, and we're working on being able to look at that more specifically.
Did overexpressing the RGS peptide have any effect on normal cardiac function or physiology in the absence of pressure overload?
So based on the experiments we've done thus far, no. We looked using hemodynamic analysis. We basically looked at the systemic blood pressure, the contractility and relaxation of the ventricle at baseline, and it was no different than the control mice. And we also looked with an isoproterenol challenge. So this is increasing the beta adrenergic signaling of the heart. That normally increases heart rate, increases contractile force. And so we looked at how both the control and our RGS overexpressing mice responded, and it was nearly identical. And also just looking at the basic cardiac function, there was no difference. So we haven't gone into detail into all the signaling, but at this point, in the absence of disease, we see no difference in these mice.
How would you envision using these findings to develop therapies to treat or to prevent cardiac hypertrophy?
Well, that's a great question and something we're pursuing. So on the surface, the best approach, and it's not a straightforward one, is gene therapy. So that is actually a big part of my lab anyway. So we've taken another peptide that appears to be salutary in heart failure, and we're almost in humans. We're doing our final large animal study. So we'll put this in the pipeline where we'll deliver through a coronary artery delivery system. The GRK2 RGS domain peptide in hypertrophic models of heart disease, and you know, see if it's efficacious. Gene therapy has its hurdles, but I mean, it's something we're experienced at, and it's getting closer to reality.
So is the idea with gene therapy to insert a copy of a gene encoding the peptide into the genome, or is it just to temporarily express it transgenically?
So the gene therapy that we do with these adeno-associated viruses, so they do not insert the transgene into the chromosomes. So they basically just sit outside the nucleus and produce the peptide. And they're engineered so they're not infectious, and they don't seem to be pathological in the clinical trials that are being done now with these vectors. So they would deliver this BARC RGS peptide just like a drug.
Is it also feasible to think about designing drugs that could mimic the peptide, drugs that are small enough to get into the cell?
Yeah, that's not straightforward, but people are trying to develop small molecules that would disrupt a protein-protein interaction, and that's one of the goals that Sarah has as she starts her independent career. And so that's always possible, too. I think, you know, we'll see, but it's certainly doable, and people are working on aspects of small molecules in this arena.
Wally and Sarah, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Schumacher and Walter Koch discussing a paper published in the March 22nd issue of Science Signaling by Schumacher and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.